The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and Flightbridge Ed in their entirety. This is the Flightbridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey everybody, Eric back with you. Today's podcast is going to be on a topic that I found a few months ago. It's an amazing article. Before we jump into that though, I just wanted to just say thank you. Obviously, we're done with Fast 18, our first event, and it was a huge success. It was epic. Just can't stress how thankful we all are here at the Flightbridge Ed team for just the support, all the great comments, all the social media buzz that we've seen. Real excited that we have Fast 19 already scheduled. It's going to be May 6th, 7th, and 8th, 2019. It's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee, same venue, same location, actually expanding that area. And, we just are trying to do something a little different. If you attended Fast 18, you know what we're talking about. Really trying to change kind of how maybe conferences are done, and really focus on kind of different ways of delivering content. And so hopefully we fulfilled your expectations, and we really hope to meet new people and see new people there in 2019. So very exciting for the future. As I said, this topic is a topic that I came across a few months ago, and it was an article done by PulmCrit, Josh Farkas from PulmCrit, which is part of the MCrit family. And he did an article on ARDS versus pseudo-ARDS, and it's called The Failure of the Berlin Definition. Now, if you've taken our review courses, we obviously talk about ARDS, and we talk about kind of how we diagnose this. And so that's why I found this article so amazing. So let's start off with a little case, and we'll set the tone. We have a 70-year-old male that was admitted to an ICU. He's been there for 48 hours, and he just had a low resection due to lung cancer. During the procedure, he ended up getting 3 units of packed blood cells. He's had 2.5 liters of urine output out since, post-op, and he's currently in a net negative of 0.5. He was extubated successfully after the surgery, and about 36 hours after, he developed shortness of breath, some hypoxemia, some anxiety, and some agitation, and he was transferred back into the ICU. They did an ABG. That ABG showed a PaO2 of 68, a PaCO2 of 42, and a bicarb of 26. pH was 7.32. Blood pressure currently is normal, 122 over 70, heart rate of 108, his respiratory rate is about 24, and he is afebrile. So we use this case, and we talk about how do we first kind of clue in on ARDS, and what is ARDS? Well, we know ARDS is the old definition is a diffuse alveolar damage. Essentially, you think about the lung capillaries, the endothelial lining gets damaged. We have a glycocalyx that starts getting broken down by these pro-inflammatory mediators, these cytokines, and we start having leakage in and around the capillaries and into the alveoli. And we have to be able to identify, number one, ARDS. And that's why this article really was profound to me, because it really takes a look at current evidence and kind of goes against mainstream. And I think it really matches into all the current evidence on fluid management and normal saline and these atherogenic injuries that we as providers cause. So how do we diagnose ARDS based on the old definition? Well, that old definition was based on an American-European consensus. And so number one, you had to have an acute onset, right? Not a chronic onset, but acute onset. This patient was normal, was recovering in post-surgery, and now is currently decompensating. Number two, bilateral infiltrates on the chest x-ray. And that's where we get into, you know, they're going to have this ground glass appearance. Essentially, you're going to have both lungs involved. And how do you differentiate that between maybe pulmonary edema? Well, number one, we're going to look at acute versus chronic onset. We're going to look at past medical history. Why did this happen? And then we look at what's called the PaO2-FiO2 ratio. And based on that American-European consensus, if that PaO2-FiO2 ratio was less than 300 but greater than 200, it was basically looked at as acute lung injury. And then if it was a PaO2-FiO2 ratio less than 200, it was considered ARDS. Well, then we have what's called the Berlin definition of ARDS. And as of 2012, they got rid of the whole acute lung injury. They don't utilize that, that thought process. So same kind of acute onset. They want to see that bilateral infiltrates. That's going to be, again, consistent with pulmonary edema. So we're going to have to look at history and, you know, look at heart size, you know, based on a posterior view on your chest x-ray, right? Your heart borders should not be greater than 50% of your overall chest width. If you're looking at an AP view, we don't want to be greater than 60%, right? And that's going to tell you, do they have some type of history of cardiomegaly? When we look at and kind of dive in deeper, the American-European consensus actually said, well, hey, look at a pulmonary capillary wedge pressure. Well, the problem with that is we don't see those. We don't see those in transport, and we're not seeing those very much even in the ICU setting. And so we know a normal pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, or you can say a diastolic off of your pulmonary artery pressure, the range is very similar. So 8 to 12 for a wedge pressure, 8 to 15 for your diastolic pulmonary artery pressure. If it was greater than 18, based on this American-European consensus, that was kind of a telltale sign that maybe this was heart failure. Maybe this was pulmonary edema. But again, the Berlin definition of ARDS excludes that thought process. So if we dive into this article, and I'm just going to kind of briefly go over this, I'm going to put the link to the article in the show notes, and really highly recommend that you read this. This is one of the most amazing articles that I've read in a long time, and it is very, very well done. If we look at this Berlin definition of acute respiratory distress syndrome, the difference, again, is they now don't think about acute lung injury. They classify this based on mild, moderate, and severe. And again, they're looking at this PaO2-FiO2 ratio. And before we kind of look at this in more depth, we have to understand that there's some limitations to that. And that limitation is basically, this is number one, based on increases in FiO2. How is cardiac output going to play a role in this overall measurement? What if somebody's metabolic rate was high or slow or low? And what if their HNH was low, right? The number one way we deliver oxygen is based on our hemoglobin concentrations. So they look at this and they said, well, mild would be anybody with a PaO2-FiO2 ratio less than 300 but greater than 200. Moderate would be somebody with a PaO2-FiO2 ratio less than 200 but greater than 100, and severe would be anybody less than 100. So I think that that is something we have to really, really consider, is the limitations and how accurate is that going to be. If we go back to our patient in the case and just really quickly calculate this, the ABG was actually taken with the patient on 50% FiO2. So remember, the PaO2 was 68. The FiO2 is 50%, so if we divide 68 into 0.50, we actually get a PaO2-FiO2 ratio of 136. So based on that old criteria, this patient would be in ARDS. Based on the new Berlin definition, this patient would be in moderate ARDS. So that's where we're going to dive into this article and kind of identify. How do we treat patients in ARDS? Obviously, they're going to be intubated. They're in respiratory failure. And we have to go back to the whole ARCHNET trial. The ARCHNET trial utilized a 6 to 8 mils per kilo tidal volume. And, you know, they say start at 8 mils per kilo and use your plateau pressure and make sure that plateau pressure is less than 30. We have to understand that if we have a plateau pressure less than 30, now based on current research and studies, we talked about driving pressure in other podcasts. We want that driving pressure less than 15. So just because your PPLAT is less than 30, that doesn't automatically mean that we're in a perfect setting. So if we consider this and we say, okay, this patient is on mechanical ventilation, they have a PPLAT less than 30, we're using lung protective tidal volume, we have a respiratory rate set between 16, 18 based on kind of their needs, their minute ventilation needs. We don't really worry about driving pressure at this point. Is this patient going to improve or not? Well, based on this case, this patient actually did not improve. And this patient kept declining to the point of dying the next day from, you know, multi-organ failure. They went through and they ruled out anything regarding pulmonary emboli. And it was determined that this patient died from ARDS. But if we look at this article and we say, could this patient be treated a little bit differently? What is the term pseudo-ARDS? Well, interesting enough, if we use lung protective tidal volume and we're using PEEPs, you know, if we start at 5 and we escalate that up and we maybe go to 10, are we truly getting full recruitment? And that recruitment is going to completely dictate what that PaO2-FiO2 ratio is. So the challenge here is if we are more aggressive with that initial treatment and they respond, let's say we take this patient, instead of putting this patient on lung protective tidal volume, instead we go right into and we place this patient on airway pressure release ventilation or APRV. And over a few hours, this patient is able to kind of be weaned down on the FiO2 down to 30%. And we calculate a PaO2-FiO2 ratio based on a new ABG. And now this patient's PaO2-FiO2 ratio has gone from 136 to 450. Does this patient have ARDS? Well, if we started out based on the criteria of this Berlin definition, the patient was classified as moderate ARDS. But we put this patient on APRV. They had really good high mean airway pressures, which recruited alveoli, and we saw a huge, huge increase from 136 to 450 on this PaO2-FiO2 ratio. So is this classified as ARDS? And this is where we get into that term of pseudo-ARDS. And that's what I love about this, is that essentially what we've done is we've fixed the patient. And are these patients being classified as ARDS because of iatrogenic injury? They're severely hypoxic. They have impaired lung compliance. They have very poor ability to clear their CO2. They have increased dead space. And they have a very slow recovery time. And it's because we're not recruiting the alveoli and allowing these patients to recover. So this article really challenges you to think about ARDS actually does exist, but it's very rare. Advances in critical care have reduced its incidence. And so these are the core things that we have to kind of understand, is that we have to recruit. We have to fix this lung compliance problem. We have to fix this increased dead space. We have to optimize CO2 clearance. We have to optimize the recovery time. We don't want a slow recovery time. We want to hit this thing hard. We want to see in that initial jump in that PaO2-FiO2 ratio. If that jumps up based on our mechanical ventilation, then we're going the right direction. This patient is considered pseudo-ARDS. That doesn't mean that these patients have to be intubated. So here are some things that he points out in this article that I thought are amazing that really match what we're seeing in mainstream medicine. Number one, fluid is bad, right? Fluid overload leads to death. Whether we're talking about burns, trauma, sepsis, right? We've heard this over and over and over. Fluids are bad, especially normal saline. We have to think about the difference between the two. Remember, normal saline has a pH of 5.5. LR, if you're going to use a fluid, you should be using LR. LR is actually considered an alkaline fluid. Once that lactate actually starts breaking down in the body, it gains a hydrogen ion and turns to bicarb. So it consumes acid and turns into a base. So it's alkalizing. So conservative fluid resuscitation, that means we do passive leg raising. There's an amazing study that I'll put in the show notes that showed a comparison where they have end-tidal CO2 applied. End-tidal CO2 was in the 20s. They do passive leg raising. Right? Remember, passive leg raising, the theory behind passive leg raising is we have 15 to 20% of our blood volume in our legs. If we simply lift the legs, we're giving our patient a fluid challenge. We're pushing more blood flow to the core. And what they saw is that within 2 minutes, that end-tidal CO2 was now greater than 30 with that passive leg raise. That's telling you that they're volume responsive, that it's all right to give them a little volume. But we have to remember the whole standard sepsis guideline of volume resuscitation of 30 mils per kilo is based on, or should be based on, ideal body weight. And I think that's missed. We look at somebody that's weighing 300 or 400 pounds and we, oh, well, they must need 30 mils per kilo. And that is not the case. I'm 5'10". If I weighed 400 pounds, I would get 6 liters or greater. And that is a bad, bad choice. So we have to be definitive in our fluid management. Do passive leg raising. Use end-tidal CO2 as your gauge. If you see a jump in end-tidal CO2 based on that passive leg raising after a few minutes, you should see a corresponding increase in perfusion status and a corresponding increase in blood pressure. If that happens, then give them some volume. But be conservative with that volume. Start with LR. If you, in contrast, passively leg raise, you don't see a corresponding increase, that means they're not volume responsive, and you start with early vasopressors, levofed being the number one first choice. We want to always monitor urine output. So monitor what's going in and what's coming back out. That's what's going to really give you the idea and thought process, always reminding you of avoiding that atherogenic volume overload. Next, how are we going to deal with that airway? Well, we don't always have to intubate. Think about BiPAP, bi-level ventilation, utilizing a gradient that is going to optimize oxygenation. If you do have to intubate, if you have APRV, utilize APRV. It might be best to try to go right into inverse ID ratio on somebody like this and see if you get a response. If this patient has a low HNH and they need transfusion, remember transfusion usually is not going to happen with a HNH that's anything greater than 7. They're going to hold off. If this is in a trauma patient, somebody like that, remember the whole 1-to-1-to-1. And so that kind of leads us to a reminder of how does ARDS happen? Does ARDS happen based on, just normal inflammatory response? And the key is that it doesn't. We have two types of ARDS and causes of ARDS, or that injury to our lungs. And we have direct lung injury and we have indirect lung injury. Direct lung injury would be somebody that maybe had a submersion injury, so we used to call near drowning. Think about somebody that was in a house fire, inhalation injuries, or you have a trauma patient that has a pulmonary contusion, somebody with pneumonia, somebody that's aspirated. Those are direct lung injuries, something that's affecting the lung, and then you're going to have an inflammatory response and kind of start that cascade. Indirect lung injury is very, very common, and it's probably the most common. So we're talking about somebody that has sepsis, somebody that has been brought in as a level one trauma patient. They're in severe, profound shock. Somebody that came in with a severe drug overdose, right? They drug overdosed on a tricyclic or, you know, something like that. Blood product administration or pancreatitis. All those are indirect lung injuries that start an inflammatory response. So if we look back at our patient, that's exactly what this patient could be classified at. Or could be a direct lung injury, right? This patient actually had surgery on his lungs for cancer. So the point is that we have to understand that the onset could be based on some injury to the lung or an indirect result. It comes back to this. Most cases of ARDS, as the article so perfectly identifies, are what's called atherogenic. And I love it. He's got volume overload, volume overload, volume overload. Number four is ventilation with inadequate recruitment. So using lung protective tidal volumes, you're only maybe recruiting a small portion of those distal airways. And so when we think about this, small volumes, right? We want to protect that lung for further injury, but we have to also understand that we have to recruit. We want good recruitment and we want to promote good opening and closing of the alveoli. If we don't optimize recruitment, what we can have is we can have what's called cyclic opening and closing of the alveoli, where we have opening and maybe we don't have enough PEEP. And so that actually causes more injury. And number five, sluggish strategies to liberate patients off the ventilator. When we look at something like this, it's not going to be something that a lot of us in the transport environment are going to be dealing with. But time on the ventilator, right? We want to get them off the ventilator. Anything like that is going to be bad. Now let's look at what's called pseudo-ARDS volume pattern. He's actually illustrated a few different patterns to identify. And so this first one is called a volume pattern. So imagine you have a patient that comes in, they're morbidly obese, maybe they have some moderate pneumonia. They come in and they get the whole sepsis guideline, right? Their lactate is drawn. May or may not have a procalcitonin drawn, and they're going to be given 30 cc's per kilo of overall fluid management based on their true weight. So this patient gets, you know, 5 or 6 liters of volume. And then you start seeing this patient deteriorate. They intubate the patient. And then because they're now classified based on the PaO2-FiO2 ratio that we illustrated earlier, as ARDS, maybe it's moderate, maybe it's severe, they're going to put on conservative volume mechanical ventilation. So low tidal volumes, higher rates, maybe some higher PEEPs. And so this patient, again, starts declining because we're not being aggressive enough. And so you then have what's called that atherogenic volume problem. You have overloaded them with fluid. You're not supporting their overall recruitment. Their primary lung injury is now getting worse because more volume is going to equal to more inflammatory response, more capillary endothelium breakdown. The glycocalyx is going to break down, and you're going to start having overload in and around the alveoli. And you start having this big gradient shunt. So number two is going to be called an effusion pattern. This closely mimics ARDS. And this is going to be what's called that venous admixture. Venous admixture is where you have a true shunt. You give them some oxygen and they should respond. You may have to optimize recruitment for that. But these patients will have these bilateral infiltrates. And that's that classic term that we see in ARDS diagnosis, bilateral infiltrates, ground glass appearance. You know, then you're going to classify what's that PaO2-FiO2 ratio. And because you have these large effusions, these large pockets of volume in the bases of the lungs, it causes a secondary atelectasis of all those little distal airways. So this very, very easily mimics ARDS. So we have to be very diligent in trying to kind of be that detective. We want to try to identify, are these effusions truly causing this ARDS? What's causing the true respiratory failure? Or is this kind of secondary based on those effusions? And then go from there. But again, it comes back to identifying the problem and getting recruitment. So that pseudo-ARDS collapse pattern is going to be our number three pattern. And this is a respiratory failure that's directly due largely from alveolar collapse, so that atelectasis. And this is most commonly seen in those lower lobes, those dependent lung areas, and we see this most often in those morbidly obese patients or these intubated patients. Sometimes this is hard to identify, and if you've ever seen any atelectasis on a chest x-ray, it looks completely whited out. Like if you ever see a chest x-ray that has an actual let's say right main stem intubation, where the left lung is not getting any volume whatsoever, that left lung will look completely whited out. So the key thing, again, it comes back to recruitment. If you optimize recruitment, it's going to kind of dictate what that PaO2 FiO2 ratio is going to do. And if that thing shoots right up there, you know that their hypoxemia was caused from simply atelectasis based on that morbid obesity or just them being intubated in general. That's all I'm going to really go over. I really highly recommend that you read this article. Again, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal read. I can't stress that enough. We share this in all of our review classes now. It's something that I've wanted to talk about on the podcast for quite a while. I think it comes back to be very, very diligent about looking at those atrogenic factors. Remember, volume overload is the number one killer. Not being aggressive with your mechanical ventilation. Get recruitment and get recruitment early. Don't think about, oh, we've got to go this lung protective pattern. Try to hit it hard and see if you have a response. Evaluate your plateau pressures. Keep those less than 30. But remember, in ARDS, true ARDS is very, very rare. Those patients truly don't respond. These patients have, you know, the severe, severe hypoxemia. Again, they have that really severe poor lung compliance. They have huge dead space ventilation problems. They have an inability to get rid of CO2. And oftentimes, based on kind of that slow recovery, they end up having residual fibrosis, and, you know, these patients just do not do very well. You know, based on this article, you know, he really illustrates that true ARDS patients just don't improve. And ultimately, that's why we see a lot of these patients, you know, if they truly do die of ARDS, they're dying from multi-organ failure, from global hypoxia. So what can we do in the pre-hospital environment? You know, we're going into some of these small areas. This is the newest stuff out here, so they may or may not know about this. So that's where we have to be good providers, good advocates for our patients. We have to stop the fluid. You know, whatever's happened before you get there has happened. You can't change that. Remember, think about LR versus normal saline. Honestly, if you're grabbing a bag of fluid, you should really be thinking about grabbing LR first. Think about mechanical ventilation. But remember, if we can avoid that, try non-invasive, try your BiPAP. Be diligent about looking at the overall big picture. Is this an acute onset versus chronic? And I think, you know, overall, you know, if you see a lot of these patients in your practice, you know, some patients or some aircrafts probably see a lot more of these types of patients than others. You know, think about and read this article and really try to apply this stuff. If you don't have a ventilator that has APRV, remember you can inverse your eddy ratio. There's differences in those two approaches, and the big difference is whether you're using APRV or inversing the eddy ratio, your ability to get rid of CO2 is going to be very limited. APRV allows for the patient to take small little breaths that can contribute and allow for more exhalation of that CO2, and that's really one of the big differences. But remember, it's all about increasing mean airway pressure. And with that, increasing mean airway pressure, you're going to actually increase intrathoracic pressure, which is going to impede on venous return and overall cardiac output. So you may have to augment them with vasopressors. Don't just dump all the fluids in there. Again, think about passive leg raising and really be diligent about, if you give fluid based on 30 mils per kilo of ideal body weight, but only use enough to get the proper response and start your vasopressors, Levofid being the number one, early. And again, that's all I have for this. I will put the link to this in the show notes. You know, if you have any ideas for podcasts, any great cases, again, shoot them to me. I'd love to kind of review those and go over them. And until next time, I will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.